This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, it's Mark Teixeira. The Michael K. Show starts now. Here's Michael, Don, and Peter on 98.7 ESPN.
Thank you, Mark, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on a Thursday, March 11th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, we're apart, but we're together, all of us, for the next 4 hours, the other 20. Well, that's your responsibility. Got a lot of stuff to talk about today, a lot of things to do today. What a difference a year makes. But first off, I'd like to congratulate the New York Post, because they hired our ex-teammate, Ian O'Connor, to be one of their sports columnists. And I think it's
a
really smart move, really forward-thinking by the Post. I mean, this guy is a three-time New York Times bestseller. He's one of the best columnists in the country, and he joins one of the best columnists in the country, and Mike Vaccaro. And I give the Post a lot of credit. Ian is really simply one of the best writers that you will ever find. He's a great reporter as well. He's worked in the tabloids in New York before he went to ESPN, and I congratulate Ian, and I congratulate the Post. That is just great, great news that his new teammate, Andrew Marchand, broke about 20 minutes ago.
And two of my favorite books, just because of who wrote it and how well he wrote the books, were Jeter and Belichick by Ian O'Connor. Both terrific books, and they're terrific because of the subject matter, but mostly because of him.
Yep. Terrific. Great hire. Just a great, great hire. You wouldn't think New York Post and Ian, you know, a lot of people think New York Post sensationalist, but the front of the paper is way different than the back of the paper. It's a great, great sports section, so it just became greater with Ian O'Connor. It really did.
I was talking about it with Andrew earlier today, Michael, that's the gold standard as far as, like, you know, like sports in New York. Like, the Post, you know, we can make fun of, you know, Headless Man and Topless Bar. That's the front. But the back, the newspaper, the sports section has always been fabulous, great hires. And not all newspapers, you know, can say that. They've really downsized, and still, you know, there's a lot of great writers in New York, and a lot of them reside with the Post.
I think I read somewhere that with the advent of, you know, digital editions of the Post and the way you could consume it in different ways, that last year was the first year that the Post made money since Murdoch bought it, like 40 years ago.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's just been a passion play for Rupert Murdoch, who I believe turns 90 today. It was either today or yesterday. He was propping that paper up for the longest time, even when I was there. So, you know, I started at the Post, right, Peter? It's a very important part of my life.
I have heard you. Yeah, some would say you're even obsessively loyal to them.
Before the whole downsizing and newspapers, you know, having issues once we got into the digital age, there was always those news stories that they were saved at the 11th hour, you know, where it looked like there wasn't going to be a paper the next morning, and then they would get it out and they'd rally and get back. And that's going back decades ago.
Yeah. I mean, I lived through it. And so now it's making money. And while most newspapers are firing people and cutting costs, the Post, it's adding a big-time columnist. So congrats to the Post.
Yeah.
So we start off looking back a year ago today, and the world really did change. And I don't know if on March 11, 2020, we knew how much it was going to change. All we knew is that we were entering a scary corridor of our lives. Because, I mean, the 1918 flu pandemic, who was around then? We didn't know what we were getting. We didn't know what we were encountering. But I think that when the NBA canceled its games the way it did, that was a shot across the bow for everybody to wake up. And what they did that day with Adam Silver, and we're going to have Adam Silver on tomorrow. We have Gary Bettman on today, by the way, the NHL commissioner today, the NBA commissioner tomorrow. What he did, you know, I was reading, ironically enough, in the Post today, might have saved a lot of lives. It really might have saved a lot of lives, because if they continued to play NBA games with crowds, I'm not saying it would have saved hundreds of thousands of lives, but it might have saved a couple of thousand lives, because people were going to continue to go to games and They were going to be super spreader events. And at that point, I think on this date last year, only about 50-some-odd people had died from coronavirus. It was not thought to be what it was going to become, where 500,000 people have already perished. So it's just it's frightening. It's frightening what started a year ago today. But somehow, I guess most of us have soldiered through and done what we had to do. And especially in this area where you hear the sound of our voice, that I think we were more careful. But, you know, New York was hit very hard. Peter, you live in the epicenter of the city, and you saw it. And it, for the most part, stores have closed, businesses have closed, yeah. Lives have been changed forever. But somehow here we are a year later, and, you know, other than the poor souls and their families that have had to deal with this in a terrible way, in the worst way, you know, I guess we've made it through to this point. But it's still pretty dangerous. And when you hear, like we did yesterday, that Texas is going to have 100% capacity for the Texas Rangers home opener, it does make you scratch your head a little bit.
Well, especially when you get reminded that Duke's now out because they couldn't play today because one of their players tested positive.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been nothing but good news over the last couple of weeks. People are getting vaccinated. Things are beginning to open up. But it's also a reminder that it's still going on. We might have controlled it. We know a lot more than we did. But, and a lot of times it's used as a political football, right? I mean, Governor Murphy in New Jersey basically said it on why they are kind of dialing it down, and New York is dialing it down, and Connecticut to a certain extent, but like Texas is going different. I mean, so it's kind of become a political thing. But it's a reminder that it's still there. And we have to be diligent. We have to be careful. Yes, we have to open up. Yes, we have to move on, clearly. Because you just described it, Michael. People have lost their lives. People have lost their businesses. People have lost their jobs. And we need to get back. But we also have to make sure that we're careful. Because it's still there.
It is still there. It's amazing what we have gone through. You know, we talked about Adam Silver's decision to put the NBA season on pause. And Adrian Wojnarowski was on KJZ this morning. You could hear them from 8 to 10 every Monday through Friday. And he talks about Silver's decision a year ago.
I think looking back, it was the most important decision. There were people at that point, you know, who thought that fans should have been out of arenas earlier than that. And looking back, they should have been. But the country was moving slow toward it. And that decision by Silver that night, I think, did prompt a lot of institutions in this country to reconsider how they were viewing their own reactions to the virus. And so it was as impactful, probably as impactful as any decision he'll make as commissioner of the NBA, just given where we were as a country.
And can you imagine how difficult the decision that was for Silver? I mean, to be the first one to make it. I mean, think about it. The Big East didn't cancel till a year ago tomorrow, where they took St. John's and Creighton off the court at halftime and said, that's it, it's over. They were continuing the Big East tournament. And then they talked to health officials and they decided to bang it then. But it should have been banged before that. The Ivy League was ahead of the curve. But there, I mean, if you're a commissioner and it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and you decide to pull the plug, you are costing your owners, who are your bosses, millions and millions of dollars, and the industry as a whole, billions of dollars. And he had the courage of his convictions to do it. And I can't wait to talk to him about it tomorrow, but it could not have been very easy. And I think that his decision made it easier for Bettman to do it, made it easier for Manfred to say in spring training, let's just put this and pause it and stop, because until one person does it, everybody else is kind of looking who's going to be the first. Adam Silver had the courage of his conviction to be the first, and I give him credit for it. He might have saved lives.
It was also a very strange situation because they had a positive test. You know, so you almost had no choice when you think about it, because that's where it really became real, because now – yeah, and this is in the infancy of us even having knowledge of what this pandemic and what this virus even was. So it's like, all right, who did Utah just play? And are those guys going to be affected? You know, what room were they in their last road trip? So you're connecting the dots and you're thinking, all right, there's a positive test in Utah, and there ended up being two. But now, all right, well, Utah was at the Garden the last game. And since then, the Washington Capitals used that room when they were in there to play the Rangers. So you started connecting all these dots, and you realized how this pandemic was. Remember that old they stopped running it now, Michael, but that matchstick analogy?
Yeah.
And they'd have the cartoon for it,
mm-hmm.
where the one matchstick touches another matchstick and touches another matchstick, so you had to get rid of a couple so it would stop spreading. It was that kind of feeling, like this could be all connected. So it was – yeah, the NBA did it, but everybody else had to. Because, yeah, how connected is all this going to be? You're sharing arenas. You're sharing dressing rooms. Some teams share charter planes. I don't know if on March 10th, March 11th, we were hosing these planes down with disinfectant. So you really began to find out how these sports are all really connected.
All right, so Utah was on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gobert tested positive. The Utah team panicked. They were kind of quarantined in their hotel. Then when they got clearance that they could fly back, Gobert could not. But they had to get out of the hotel where they were before they had a flight the next day, and no hotels would take them. People were scared. People didn't know exactly what was going on. They thought the whole team was infected. Finally, they got a hotel near the airport. They stayed there for overnight, and then they flew home, but they had to leave Gobert back. I guess we'll all give our personal recollections. I was in Tampa at this time. I had done a spring training game earlier, flew back, and then flew back down because Yes does a promo shoot every year, and we have everybody down there, and we have a dinner. So our promo shoot at that point, I've never even told Don and Peter this story, was in a medical school, and it was premised on – it never ran, obviously – but it was all completed. It was premised on, you know, we were Yes University, so we needed classroom space and things like that. And so we were in classrooms, and we cut the promos, and it was like 2 full days there. Then when the world changed, they decided I was supposed to do the 2 games that weekend and then fly home. And we decided, the Yankees canceled the games, Major League Baseball canceled the games, so we were going to go on a flight the next day. And we have a tradition where we go to a dinner as for 20 years now. This would have been the 20th year. That was the 19th. We all go to dinner at a local restaurant and, you know, just have a good time. And we decided to go through with it. Now, in retrospect, it was madness that we did that. There were 20 people at a table in a restaurant that was packed to the gills. I mean, there but for the grace of God, we all could have gotten it. We didn't. I remember flying home the next morning, wiping everything down with Lysol wipes, wearing a mask the whole time. The plane was empty. I was flying back with my producer, Bill Bolin, and he was sitting across from me, and he asked if he could borrow one of my wipes, and I said, no, I need them. And then I gave him one. And we looked at each other, and we didn't know the world. We just knew that something was really bad, and the plane was almost empty. But here's where I didn't tell the story. About a week later, I get a call from Flip, and the guy who ran the promo shoot, who was the head of promotions at the time at Yes, John Ziegler, and it was at 9:30 at night. And you usually don't get like phone calls like that by two people at 9:30 at night unless something's wrong. And I said, oh no. So they said, are you okay to talk right now? I said, yeah. They said, well, we hate to tell you this, but one of the students in the school where you guys shot the promo has coronavirus. And we're bound to tell everybody that shot the promo that, you know, you might have been exposed. Well, you guys know me, how I probably react.
I'm sure you calmly said, what are the odds? We should probably be fine.
No, I didn't overreact to them at all because I didn't want to show my hand.
Okay.
But I said, okay. And they said, we're really, really sorry. I said, well, what are you sorry for? There's no way you could have known. And so they did their due diligence. They told me. They told all the people that were there for the shoot. And then I just told Jody, pack the kids up, move them away from me. I'm probably got it, blah, blah, blah. That's when I reacted like you would think I would react. But that was the beginning. And then baseball was put on pause until, you know, the beginning of August. I didn't even know there was going to be a season. And we did 4 months of shows, which, I mean, we've done this show now, what, since when, Don? A long time.
1947.
1947. And those 4 months, probably the proudest I am of shows that we've done.
Yeah.
For us to do 4 shows, 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, and there was no sports going on, and somehow we made it through, and we actually did okay, I think. And I keep getting messages from people on Twitter that we've helped them. And I wish I could answer every single one. You guys helped us. I mean, for us to even be able to do the show got us through the madness and, you know, for 4 hours a day took us away from the worries. Gee, I wonder, you know, how safe we all are. But I'm sure that Don and Peter feel the same way. Incredibly gratifying that we could do those 4 months of shows without one speck of sports being played.
They meant so much to me and just to have something normal going on. Yeah, we didn't have much to talk about, although we did catch some breaks because we had the NFL draft. We had Brady going to Tampa. You know, so there were some things, and we made the top five and the Tales from the Crib and the trivia and all that. But the fact that you guys responded, and it was hard, right? Because people aren't in their cars anymore. People were losing their jobs. People were getting sick. And it was just great to be able to have 4 hours to just be with our family, talk some sports, have some fun, and just kind of put it to the side a little bit. And also the work we, you know, that Andrew did and RJ and now Anthony, you know, and getting Governor Murphy on and getting like breaking news story and kind of making sure everybody knew that what was going on. But just to, for me, it was, don't thank me. I thank you guys just having the opportunity to be able to do it 4 hours a day and still do it 4 hours a day.
Let's go back to this day in 2020 and Don and I guess Dave Maloney were on the Rangers pregame.
Okay.
They talked about the NBA suspensions, suspending play. So here's Don and Dave and what they were saying a year ago today.
A little shaken by the news coming down from the NBA and the inevitability of this probably happening in other leagues as well. Now, we don't want to speculate, and if you're just joining us, the NBA has suspended operations after tonight until they can learn more about how to move forward after a member of the Utah Jazz tested positive for the coronavirus. And already the Columbus Blue Jackets saying they're going to play their game tomorrow in front of no fans. I mean, this is something like I've never experienced in my life. You?
Oh, yeah. I mean, who has, unless you were around in the epidemic in 1918? I think the thing just to remind that the NBA revenue is largely driven by the TV dollar, right?
Yes.
And the NHL revenue is getting butts in the seats. And the NBA can certainly take that more aggressive step, but having set that as the standard, I don't think anything moving forward as far as participation would shock us.
So that was a year ago today, and I mean, we're all thankful that we're still around, and you know, I'm one shot into two that I need to get. Don and Peter will hopefully get their inoculation shortly, and hopefully we're very close to returning to normal. So, I mean, a lot of people in this country should be proud that, you know, they have soldiered through and made their way through. And the sports, I guess the one sports league that was hurt worse than the other ones would be college basketball, because those kids never got a chance to finish their season. Every other sport did. NBA stopped for a while. NHL stopped for a while, but they did crown a champion. Major League Baseball, they delayed their season till August. It was just a 60-game season, but they did get a World Series champion. The NFL played without incident, well, serious incident, and they crowned a Super Bowl champion. The one thing that's empty, and there's other college sports too because they didn't even play seasons, but a season that had started did not get a chance to end, and I feel for those kids, the seniors on those teams. St. John's last year, they were starting to get on a roll. They were leading Creighton at halftime, and their season was pulled off the board, and you know, those seniors never got a chance. So that's probably the one sport there was no March Madness. They got hit hard. They lost the money for March Madness as well, and I think they're still trying to stagger back, and I think that this season has been compromised more than any other sport either in college basketball. It just has.
I mean, listen, you know, I'm no huge fan of it, but I do think college football was affected as well. The interest was down, the schedules were wacky. It just did not have the same oomph whatsoever. Now, listen, no one got it worse than college basketball. Last year, they lose the tournament. This year, they're completely compromised. You know, we've talked about Fordham and teams around here whose schedules have just been a disaster. We on this show, we seem to believe that the interest for the tournament's going to be way down this year. So they could see really damage, not only 1 year where they miss it altogether, but a second year where people just aren't that dialed in. It's been bad for college basketball.
I was talking about it with Andrew because he's a sick college basketball fan. They need the fans more than anybody. I mean, we'd be talking, even if you're not a big college basketball fan, somebody last night would have had a buzzer beater to get him into the tournament, and the fans would have all stormed the court. I mean, that's part of college basketball, not playing in front of an empty building. the fans, the student body, all that, the cheerleaders. That's all. That's college basketball. Not just, you know, two teams playing each other. You know, that there's such an atmosphere that we were robbed of, right? I mean, Rutgers around here where I live, Rutgers going to the tournament is a big deal. But what's the highlight? What's the buzz when you're not doing it in front of anybody? You know, they clinched that chance with a great game in Minnesota, but it didn't have that same feel as it would if that building was full and if the rack was full of fans, or what St. John's is doing this year. If they were able to play in front of a bunch of fans at Madison Square Garden or Carneseca Hall or Seton Hall and what they're doing, I mean, that's a part of it. But professional sports, yeah, you kind of understand fans are important, but God, isn't that the lifeblood of college sports, especially basketball?
Yeah, it really took the legs out from college sports. And I know what Peter's saying about football, but those kids got a chance to play, and they did crown a champion. You know, the end of the 2020 season for college basketball, there's no ending. There's no nobody won. There's no champion, and that will be forever the case.
And it's their own fault, Michael, but of the four professional sports, baseball is probably the most affected. Going from 162 games to 60, you know, really changing the format of the postseason and stuff. They got through it, and they crowned a champion, and I'm never going to say that, you know, Los Angeles didn't deserve it, but of the four major sports, I think baseball was impacted the most.
But it's hard to feel sorry for them because it was more of a negotiating union issue and an owner issue, because they could have played 100 games.
Probably, yeah.
But the way it turned out, they could have played close to a full season.
Yeah, it is crazy. But just, you know, in the 11th hour, you know, changing the format of who goes to the playoffs, it was their own fault because of the negotiations. But the negotiations existed because of the pandemic. You know, so that's why we were in a situation. And it wasn't ideal to go to the bubble in the NHL and in the NBA, but they got through it, and we were able to crown four champions. We had the draft. Remember going into the draft, Michael, it was, why are we doing this?
Right.
I mean, Adam Schefter said, why are we having a draft? There's people dying in the streets. And they had the draft, and it worked, and people watched it, and it felt normal. And those players got to play in the NFL. So when you really look at it, on that day when I was talking to Dave, I literally didn't know what tomorrow was going to bring. And I don't know if it's been a long time or a short time, because sometimes it feels like this year feels like it was 100 years. And a lot of times it feels like it's been 2 weeks. It's a crazy sensation to think about what's happened over the last year or so. But from not knowing on March 11th to what was accomplished over the last year, I think sports got off light. I do. I think that it was handled well. We didn't see any players pass away from the virus. A handful got sick and got had it bad. But for the most part, we had no deaths as far as in relation to the players on the field. We were able to crown champions. I mean, I think from a sports perspective, we were kind of fortunate.
Now, our correspondent from Australia, Jar from Oz, did point out the XFL got affected. They canceled the league.
Right.
Yeah. True. COVID ended the entire league. So, I will take some phone calls. We've got a lot of stuff to do today. As we mentioned, we are going to talk to Gary Bettman at 5 o'clock, the commissioner of the NHL. Our good buddy Scott Van Pelt, who has a great podcast out about this day a year ago, he's going to join us at 4 o'clock. We always love talking to him. So, sit back, relax. We'll get you through the next 4 hours right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, Jets Nation. Get your 2021 season tickets today and get back to live football at MetLife Stadium this season. You'll lock in the best seats and pricing to see the green and white at every game. Plus, you'll get great benefits, including free food, beverage, and merchandise credit. So get back to football today at nyjets.com/tickets or call 1-800-469-JETS. I need some guidance. So Don mentioned this before. New York and New Jersey, I think they're opening restaurants to 50% capacity. Great.
Yes.
I mean, we've got to save the restaurants in our city, in our state. We've got to. You don't want to do it at the expense of people's lives, but they'll do it responsibly, hopefully. So you're going to have 50% of people in an enclosed space. Stop. Now answer me this. Why are you limiting 10% of the people at Citi Field and Yankee Stadium? Why? If you get a 50% in a restaurant, a small enclosed area, why are you limiting it to 10% in an outdoor setting? Why? Somebody explain to me how that makes sense. And I'm not advocating for the Yankees and the Mets to get crowds. I just need sense to be made from these decisions.
I do think sometimes we make decisions as politicians because it's what's good for the economy and help some of these restaurants out. You know, I think there is inconsistency, sure. But it's the, all right, things are gradually getting better, so let's open it up so maybe we can help some of these restaurants. Yankees and Mets don't need help financially. You know, so
but there are people that work at those stadiums.
We don't have to cut them some slack.
But there are people that work at those stadiums that would be hired to work if there were more people that they need the work.
No, I get it. But
it's as simple. Don's right. It's as simple as political pressure. I mean, one involves people screaming at the top of their lungs and saying that their businesses are falling apart and needing to respond. And then the other one's the sports industry, where you're right, Michael, there are pawns in the game who are casualties, but in general, people are looking at the sports thing as a rich people problem. It's about these big businesses who will survive. So you're right, there are people who fall right between the cracks there, but I think that's why you're seeing different strokes for different folks.
But, I mean, when something is so – there's such an equity that you could have 50% in a small enclosed space, but you're going to keep 10% in an open air, it doesn't make any sense.
But
are we opening up or not?
But that's the sense it makes, is that, you know, it's all arbitrary, right, of why we went from 10% to 25% to 50%. There's still restaurants out there, Michael, that 50% is just not enough.
I know.
They're still going to fold
up.
They can't open.
I am glad that they're expanding the capacity. I am glad, and I hope they're doing it safely. I'm sure they are. Why not do it in arenas? Why only 10% at Madison Square Garden?
Because honestly, I guess nobody really – who cares?
Well, first of all, let's really talk turkey here. The people that support politicians are the rich people that own teams.
All right, I'm trying to make an educated guess here just by living through this the last year. I'm sure a lot of these governors and mayors don't want to open it up to 50%, but they feel like they have to because these restaurants are dying. So – they're making exceptions because it's important for this economy. It's important for these restaurants to be able to stay open. They're marching in the streets begging to be back to 100% because they can't afford to pay their rent. They can't afford to keep their employees paid. But I don't think right now politicians are worried about the percentage of people at a Knick game or a Yankee game. So
they're
keep
not
that
worried
low.
About
we
it,
can
it,
do
it,
that.
It,
that's
it,
no problem. Those they're that's not a business that's hurting. Let's try to help the businesses that are hurting.
Well,
right
I
now.
Mean, they're not in danger of going out of business, but they are certainly not making the money that they claim. I mean, Hal Steinbrenner was on the air. He said lost more money than any team in baseball. So why wouldn't you want to help a big business too?
Because right now they're not going out of business. These restaurants are, and I can understand that.
But again, we're following the science and things. The science tells you that outdoor transmission is very difficult. So you're going to keep that at 10%, but indoor transmission is not as difficult, and you're going to increase that to 50. It doesn't make sense science-wise. Anyway, Scott Van Pelt's going to join us. He has a great podcast out, and we want to talk to him about it. We'll talk to him about everything because he's a great, great guest.
Also, he's going to be in a good mood, as am I.
Why? Maryland's doing well?
Nice victory over Michigan State in round one of the Big Ten tournament today.
Oh, that is so exciting.
He'll be a chipper SVP.
I'm surprised that Andrew's not down a little bit more because the Syracuse lost to UVA 72-69.
Well, you knew the score by heart. You're dialed into that Syracuse.
God
UVA.
Hates me.
Well, if it can hurt Andrew, I'm dialed in. Anyway, Scott Van Pelt joins us in a moment. Stick around for that. Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Slip the ice apart and break the frozen.
Ice picks. Ice picks. Ice picks. Ice picks.
Ice picks brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Well, listen. If I was the general manager of Don LaGreca making picks, I'd make a change. It's been bad. It's been a rough batch. But you know what? You just got to keep plugging along. Penguins are in Buffalo to take on the Sabres. Now, Buffalo was the reason why I didn't win two ice picks ago with the Flyers not covering. But Pittsburgh's playing better. They're as healthy as they've been all season long. I think Pittsburgh covers the minus goal and a half at plus 135 against the Sabres in Buffalo. That's Ice Picks, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Place your parlay, props, and future bets at the King of Sportsbooks. Get the app today.
Don, can you give me a more clear answer to my question? Do you think that the league has sort of benefited as much as they should have from the Crosby-Ovechkin rivalry?
Yeah, I don't know what else you could do. They're on national television constantly.
They play played the playoffs
big
every
playoff
year,
games
basically.
Before. I don't know what else you could do.
And like you, I mean, I was just curious, like whether or not the league has grown sort of on a level that you would expect. With
I honestly, where this sport was when they left ESPN and canceled an entire season, and that should have been Ovechkin's rookie year, and then after the cancellation, it was Crosby's rookie year. It's unbelievable the growth. It's just unfortunately, it's never going to be one of the top three, but I think they've done everything they've could, and I think it's going to get even better with ESPN. I mean, I don't know what else. You know, they market them. They're in commercials. They're on national television all the time. Both teams have been good. Both teams have won Stanley Cups with those guys there.
Right.
Washington was facing bankruptcy. So was Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And now you can't get a ticket in Washington or Pittsburgh. So is it NBA level? No, but I think it's been terrific. And I thought that was, Michael, probably the best question of the interview.
Peters?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't think so at all.
I thought it was terrific.
It was a non sequitur.
It was a non sequitur, but I mean, we just talk about COVID for an hour straight. I mean, there's other things to the sport besides COVID.
Okay. This wow. Hoops update.
That's just dismissive and disrespectful. That was actually a thoughtful
question.
Well,
I'm not going to get into a debate with whether or not it was a good question or not. That would be a waste of our listeners' time.
But so you're just going to throw it out there and take off.
Well, what you defended yourself. Don said it was a great question. They don't have to listen to me. They could take your word for it. This Hoops update is brought to you by Wendy's. Wendy's, where quality is our recipe. Wendy's, we got you.
This is a tough update, Michael.
This is a tough one for St. John's fans. They've had a really nice season, but they lose to Seton Hall in overtime, 77-69. Now, if you believe in Joe Lenardi, and we do, he makes bracketology out every single day, who's on the bubble, first four out, next four out. And he said before this game, the winner of St. John Seton Hall stays on the bubble while the loser is done. So St. John's has had some nice wins. They've had a very good season. According to Lenardi, he thinks that they are done because of this loss, and Seton Hall remains on the bubble with the victory. Also, Syracuse lost today, and he said Syracuse remains in the projected field despite the loss to Virginia. Multiple teams are in position to pass the Orange over the next few days, so Boeheim and company wait and watch. Michigan State also stays in the field despite losing to Maryland and should not be in danger. Oklahoma State and West Virginia have traded places on the 3-seed and 4-seed lines following their Big 12 quarterfinal this morning. Villanova has fallen from a 4-seed, replaced by Florida State, who is idle. That's where we are. So a big loss by St. John's in overtime to Seton Hall, 77-69.
Now, how many games do you think they would have had to win in this tournament to get in? Because he said he'd still be on the bubble had they won.
One more, they probably have a chance, I think.
Wow.
What else do we have here?
When you say bubble, I think of Syracuse, right? That's kind of been where they've been for like the last decade.
I think Syracuse is in. I really do. I mean, they play in a really tough conference. They have a representative record. I think they're in. So we talked about Patrick Ewing being chapped that he had his passes looked at. The quote is, "I thought this was my building, and I feel terrible that I'm getting stopped, accosted, people asking for passes. Everybody in this building should know who the bleep I am, and I'm getting stopped. I can't move around this building." I was like, what the hell is this Madison Square Garden? Well, we checked in with MSG because that's the right thing to do repertorially. And an MSG spokesman said, Jim Dolan and Patrick Ewing have a longstanding relationship. They spoke this afternoon and reaffirmed that. We all know, respect, and appreciate what he means to the Garden in New York. Good luck to him and his Hoyas in the Big East semifinals. I have never heard that Dolan and Ewing have a bad time together.
No.
You know what I think this is? I think it's just a guy or gal doing their job. They're told to check everybody's pass, and they're just doing their job. And although Patrick Ewing, in my opinion, should absolutely be recognized by people in the Garden, he should also have his pass. And the bottom line is...
It's the nozzly thing to not be willing to pull out your pass.
Right. It's like, do you know who I am? That's a really dangerous card to play. Now, Patrick Ewing should be able to play it because of his size and his stature and what he did in that building. But I just think it's as simple as a security person doing what they're told to do.
I think you're probably right.
That's what it comes down to. I told you we might be on the precipice of some new Major League Baseball rules. But what they do, which is pretty smart, is they play it out first in the minors. All right, so in AAA this year, they're going to try to reduce player injuries and collisions. So the size of first, second, and third base will be increased from 15 inches to 18 inches square. So that would be 15 inches square is okay. The competition committee also expects the shorter distances between bases created by increased size to have a modest impact on the success rate of stolen base attempts and the frequency which a batter runner reaches base on ground balls and bunt attempts. It is going to have an effect. It is. I'm sorry. How many times do we see a bang-bang play? Now a bang-bang play is going to be clearly safe because the base is bigger. Well, I don't understand why they're increasing the size of any base but first. They right. should have first base extended into foul territory so that you don't have those awkward times when the base runner has to run in the baseline and get hit with a throw. Have it in foul territory. What do they have that in Little League? That's what they should have.
I think they have it in softball, I know.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. Like, I don't get why making the bases bigger on its second and third are going to do anything.
I don't get it. Now, because double again, A, go ahead.
The play is in front of the bag. Like the right? So if the collision at second, third are going to be when the third baseman, shortstop or second baseman has the ball to apply a tag. Where is he going to apply the tag? In front of the base. The collision is going to take place before he gets to the bag.
And also, I'm sorry. I watch so many. There are no collisions at second and third base. That's you're working off a false narrative. There are no collisions at second and third base. You've eliminated collisions essentially at home plate. There are not there's not Hal McCray sending Willie Randolph into left field anymore.
No, because you can't do the takeout slide to break up the double play. There's never anything at third. Nobody hits triples anymore, right? It's incredible to me what they do. Like, that's minutia to me. That's not doing anything. That's to do that. It's not moving any kind of needle.
All right,
like you said, you want to extend first base into foul territory because that's a pretty disgusting collision. Sometimes you get the defenseless first baseman waiting for the throw and he gets barreled into. Now you don't have to worry about that.
Double A. This will have an effect. They have a rule about defensive collisions. The defensive team must have a minimum of four players on the infield, each of whom must have both feet completely in front of the outer boundary of the infield dirt. Depending on the preliminary results of this experimental rule change, MLB may require two infielders to be positioned entirely on each side of second base in the second half of the AA season. These restrictions on defensive positions are intended to increase the batting average of balls in play. That could work. Rather, because you know what? Players are not going to change the way they hit. We've seen it. Guys like Paul O'Neill say it's not that tough to take the ball the other way. They're not going to do that. So since they're not going to do it, they're going to change the defensive positioning. High A, there's a new step-off rule. Pitchers are required to disengage the rubber prior to throwing to any base with the penalty of a balk in the event the pitcher fails to comply. MLB implemented a similar rule in the second half of the Atlantic League season in 2019, which resulted in a significant increase in stolen base attempts and an improved success rate after adoption of the rule. So the Andy Pettit move is out because his foot essentially was on the rubber.
I played it in high school, step off, and now they don't really do that anymore. So are the analytic guys going to now try to steal bases that it's going to be easier?
They could. I mean, that's what these rules are about. And finally, in low A, they're going to have pickoff limitation and a pitch timer. Pitchers will be limited to a total of two step-offs or pickoffs per plate appearance while there is at least one runner on base. A pitcher may attempt the third step-off or pickoff in the same plate appearance. However, if the runner safely returns to the occupied base, the result is a balk. Depending on the preliminary results of this experimental rule change, MLB will consider reducing the limitation to a single step off or pick off per plate appearance with at least one runner on base. This is tough because then it becomes a gambit. When are you going to make your throw? And once you do make your throw, you're not going to make another throw. So the runner is good to go. If they want action on the base paths, this stuff is going to increase action on the base paths.
Well, this is clearly what they're trying to do. Every rule is to try to increase stolen base opportunities.
Yep.
Because that is an exciting thing that's been lost. But will the analytic guys see this opportunity, or are they going to stick to their guns and say a stolen base is just too risky? It's a low percentage play for us.
Well, I've always been told that a stolen base is something the analytics guys are for if you make it 80% of the time. Well, with these rules, 80% is going to be something that could be done.
Right. Luke Voigt's going to be stealing bases.
Interesting stuff. Your thoughts on that? 1-800-919-3776. ENN's coming up at 6. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on YES and 98.7 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Jet fans, enter for your chance to win an authentic Jets helmet signed by new head coach Robert Saleh. To enter, visit NYJets.com from now until Monday, March 15th at 11:59 p.m. No purchase necessary and open to legal residents of the U.S. 18 years or older at time of entry. One quick addendum to the rules I just told you about. The bases are going to be bigger, but the one base that will remain 90 feet from home plate is going to be first base. So the added inches to the base will be an advantage to the first baseman who can stretch closer to the throw. But the runner from home plate to first base will not get the first base 3 inches sooner, because that still remains 90 feet away. So they keep that, the integrity of that, in order. But second base and third base are inherently a bit closer. And if you think about it, Don and Peter, if the added size on the first base bag is into the field, right? Well, then that would tell you that the distance between first and second now is much shorter than 90 feet. Much shorter. It's not just the 3 inches on second. It's the 3 inches on first, too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And that's going to be a big deal, helping, you know, stolen bases, doubles. They're trying to enhance offense, right?
I don't blame them.
And you're also, they've enhanced offense with the home run, but now you're enhancing offense as far as there being some action. Now maybe you'll take that extra base that you wouldn't before. Now you'll steal. I mean, that's the problem with all these home runs, is that it's a home run or a walk. You know, I got a little feedback yesterday. Apparently, 43% of balls in play are ground balls.
Yep.
But my argument to that is, how much less are balls in play than they were before?
It's not. It's not much less. The numbers will tell you it was always about 43%, 40 to 43%.
Yeah, but balls in play on the ground.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, how much less are balls in play?
Yeah, there are more strikeouts now. No, I get it. But still, 43% of balls in play are hit on the ground.
Right, but if there are more strikeouts and there are more walks, Michael, then that's less balls in play. So the balls in play, when it's struck in the field, 43% are on the ground. But it's still less than when we were growing up, because there's less balls in play.
But still, there's enough ground balls that you should have a prime defense to get those outs.
Well, when I'm giving up home runs, walks, strikeouts, it just means that it's less than it was before. So that 43% kind of is not the same as it was, because there are way more home runs, way more strikeouts, and way more walks.
Let's go to Omar in East Brunswick. Omar.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
What's
good
up?
How are you?
Good. I'm doing really good. So I just had two quick questions, Michael. So my first question was, do you think the MLB should or ever will ban the use of a shift against left-handed players? Because I just think personally that it would make the game better to see, because more lefties will be able to get hits. And also, do you think the DH will come back before the season starts? And that's those questions. So I hope you guys have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Omar. Unless there's a last-minute change in baseball, remember we found out about expanded playoffs like 2 minutes before the first game started last year. So, but everybody I'm talking to doesn't look like they're going to change. But that doesn't mean that it's impossible. And if you were listening earlier, what they're trying in the minor leagues, putting two infielders on each side of second base, then that's banning the shift.
Yeah.
You can still have somebody shaded up the middle, but you can't have three guys on the right side of the infield with the second baseman in short right field. That's not going to be allowed. You have to be on the skin of the infield, and they're trying that out. What was that, in double A? I think that was in double A, and that's a precursor to try it out in the big leagues. Let's go to Andy in Forest Hills. Andy.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
How's everybody doing? I'm cool. Terrific. Thank you very much. Everybody seems to be focusing on the offensive side of it. But if the base is sticking 3 inches out, also the first baseman wouldn't have to step back as far.
Yep.
So, you know, it would still kind of be a bang-bang play because everything's that much closer. But
yeah, I mean, they're trying to increase offense, Andy, and you're absolutely right. So I guess the outs that they're taking away from the defense by banning a shift, they're going to give some of them back because bang-bang plays happen all the time at first base. So a first baseman being 3 inches closer to the throw is going to result in more outs.
It's one of – how do I phrase it? Like one of the most accurate things in sports is 90 feet.
Right.
Like, it was perfect. Because you're right. There's so many plays that are just bang-bang.
Yeah,
like, if it was any closer, if they had made it 89 feet, if they had made it 91, the game completely changes. You talk about a game of inches. Michael, that's it.
Yep.
So many plays are bang-bang. They nailed that. 90 feet was perfect.
Amazing. Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Very quickly, we told you about Carlos Carrasco being shut down. His elbow was a little sore. He's going to throw again on Sunday, and they'll test it out. He doesn't seem to be so concerned. Buster Olney was on with DC and the other guy, and he said that this could be a big deal.
I feel like that for the Mets, it's more critical what's going on with Carrasco than the Yankees with Britton because the context of the two teams is so different. You know, the Yankees are in the American League where very few teams actually worked in the offseason to get better other than the White Sox. You know, the Yankees on paper look like if they stay healthy, they could wind up winning the American League East and maybe even comfortably were the Mets. In the division, the best division in baseball, with all five teams being, hope for making the playoffs, it's just a very different context, reduces the Mets' margin for error.
That's why it's important that he is healthy. And now, at best, Don, I don't know if he starts the season on time. You can't be that concerned about it. You just want him healthy for the majority of the season. But he hasn't thrown in anger yet. I mean, he hurt the elbow, or it stiffened up on him, throwing BP, so some competitive juices came in. He has battled leukemia, so he was not in camp on time because the doctors were examining him and making sure that he was getting his COVID-19 vaccine because he needs to get it. He is certainly somebody with underlying condition. That's leukemia, so that is in remission right now. So he came in late, and then the elbow stiffens up. So I don't know if he's going to be able to be ready for the opening week, but the Mets have some depth there, but the depth that they have, the Petersons, the Lucchesis, the Yamamoto, they are not Carlos Carrasco.
No,
Carlos
Carrasco
could be.
And that's what I loved about that acquisition. I loved getting him to be a part of this rotation. So that would really be awful. And what a great job by R.J. Santillo, Peter.
What'd he do?
You know how tough it is to get a guest between 5 and 8 in the morning?
Oh, yeah, that's
But you don't realize one thing. Buster only wakes up every day at like 4:10 in the morning. That's the guy to get.
Yeah, you need to have a daily with him.
Yeah, he's a farm boy, so he used to get up to milk the cows. He wakes up all the time early in the morning.
No, he literally still wakes up at 4 a.m.?
Yeah.
But unless you want to have a guest your last segment, right, you're working from the parameters of 5 and 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, the first time slot they have that's not straight up offensive to someone is like 7:25. Prior to that, it's like if you're asking for a big name, go scratch.
Wow.
But you still got to ask. How uncomfortable is that?
Got to ask.
Well,
that's sorry.
I'd love to be on that show. What time? Well, I have 5:40 open.
5:40, yeah.
6:20. Sorry? Say again?
That's why it puts a lot of pressure on DiPietro and Canty and the other guy on the show. They've got to be entertainers.
That's Dave Rothenberg, pound for pound, the best host at this station.
Now, a lot of people would take offense to that. I know. I
argue
now.
Your point.
I'm a great host. To wrangle you two animals, I'm unbelievable. The stuff I do.
I agree. There's a lot of stuff you do that is absolutely unbelievable. Like basically telling Scott Van Pelt I stink.
That I was said you had a musk about you.
That's what he was saying, Peter, right?
And you know what's interesting? That Michael throws the and calling him incredibly good looking.
Right.
You know that he knows at that point everything you just said might be false.
You know what? And Don, you said something during that interview that offended me too. You're not really, you're just an acquaintance with Michael. We are friends. We text all the time. I was checking in with him when he was, he got COVID all the time. We're very good friends. So don't
very
say.
Very good friends.
Really? Yeah, we're very good friends.
Very good text friends.
We text all the time.
Well, I'm sorry. Nobody is contacted with other people. I don't live in the same state as him.
So prior to that, does he know Jody?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, because she watched Channel 5 back in the day.
You know what? I got to tell you, and I hope this doesn't come off the wrong way, I despise both of you. I really do.
Well, because you...
Every day I come to work, I just tense up.
Great looking guy, which means nothing. I mean,
but that's just not...
We're getting him on to talk sports. He's a great looking guy.
But also, Scott knows that's not why he's on TV.
You done?
I'm just pointing out a truism.
You know what? The fact that he's bald and wears headphones, it makes for a great logo. You don't have a logo.
Tremendous logo. No one argued that. See, that's the difference. If you had said at the end, and he has one of the best logos in all of sports, I would have said.
Than the NBA logo.
He might be. And I would have said, you know what? Michael's right. He's got a hell of a logo. But instead you go, you're one of the best looking guys around. I went, he's still talking to Scott?
You're a jerk. We'll come back with ENN where he can be a jerk for 30 minutes or more right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.